welcome. I am remembering we still don't have anything close to a name for this. So,
the world's greatest online magazine podcast.
Like it.
Catchy. The Wagump.
The Wagump. Actually, that's not bad. Okay. We only got a little bit of time, so we're going to get down to the important stuff. Is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich a sandwich? Wait, no, it is a sandwich. Is it a good sandwich?
No.
Thank you. All right. Okay.
Crushing your head with my fingers.
It had to be done. I mean, I know, Pete, you're a person who likes a good, you know, poisonous berry sandwich. So why does the PB&J not work for you?
Mostly because of the peanut butter and somewhat the jelly.
No, I'm the other way. It's the jelly I can't do. Peanut butter's fine. But even then, I don't like sweet stuff in sandwiches. Like, even a peanut butter banana sandwich wouldn't do it for me.
I mean, peanut butter and anything sandwich is just hard pass.
All right. We'll figure that one out. Okay. Moving on. to keep Dan happy. thankfully, you can't see the video. He's been making many menacing faces. So let's talk about the World Super Spreader Series event. Well, we'll get to that part later. But how about all in all, just playoff baseball in 2020? The whole season was obviously a mess. But overall, if you want to ignore all that other stuff, the playoffs were good quality. Maybe not that first round, but definitely getting into the rest of the series, right?
Yeah.
The
first series were mostly not that interesting. And that's not even with the sad disappointment of the Minnesota Twins themselves. I think they weren't they all sweeps except for one or two.
I'm trying to bring up the playoff tree here, but yeah,
I know that
except for one or two, they're all sweeps, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I know the White Sox won the first game against Oakland.
None of them were that competitive. None of them featured any compelling baseball. I mean, it was all just, even the ones that weren't sweeps, were every game was pretty obvious.
The only one that really felt like a...
Real quick, the Cardinals won a game as well. But yeah, just the Cardinals and the White Sox.
Cardinals won a game against the Padres, that's correct. Actually, there was at least one or two of those Cardinals-Padres games that were kind of interesting in a back-and-forth way. And I know the second game seemed the Yankees in Cleveland was also... at least a back and forth game. That was about it from the first round. Basically, every other series felt like one team got up and then they stayed up, and that was about it.
I don't remember too much interesting in the division series either, I guess. Maybe the Rays-Yankees?
Rays-Yankees was pretty good.
Rays-Yankees was about as classic as you're ever going to get out of a division series. Game five was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's hard to, I mean, it's hard to remember now, but the Rays did basically exactly what you would want them to do. I mean, they did their optimum performance in that game five. Like, they went Glasnow, Anderson. I mean, and this is before Nick Anderson started sucking, but then with Glasnow, Anderson, Fairbanks, and Castillo, or Castillo, Fairbanks, and each one of them didn't face more than eight or nine Yankees. Like, none of them faced any Yankee a second time.
Which we will get to here shortly.
Right.
I imagine we will spend some time on the number of times a Rays pitcher is allowed to face. I imagine that'll come up later.
But it's important. But look at that's an example of how it works, right? It's like they played that Yankees game five perfectly, and it worked perfectly.
Well, and that one was the one that had, like, literally, if it had happened in the ALCS or in the World Series, it would have been one of the classic games ever, Game 5, with Brasso getting up and working out this crazy at-bat against
Chapman.
the guy who had hit him in the head earlier in the season and launching the game-winning home run off of him. It was amazing. It was easily the at-bat of the year. And just because it happened in the division series, if it would have happened elsewhere, it would have been like one of the biggest storylines of the last decade. As it turns out, it's the division series. I get it's not quite as big, but it was still, it was amazing watching it. It was like electrifying watching it. To me, that was the best game of the year.
Wow. Let's move to the championship series quick. I'd go Dodgers-Braves first. I know it was a seven-game series, but that one, in my mind, it it's not as exciting as I remember it to be for a 7-game series.
You were, I had talked with Dan when the Braves went up.
They were up 3-1.
They were up 3-1. They were up 3-1, but they were up 2-0 at one point, weren't they?
Yeah, because the Dodgers blew game 3 open right away.
Yeah, exactly. They were up 2-0, and I told you that even with them up down 2-0, you almost still have to figure that the Dodgers are
still the favorite.
The favorite. I mean, yeah. They're still the best team in baseball. They sure they spotted the Braves 2 games, but they have to be considered like the favorite to win this. And I will admit, when it got 3-1, I was like, well, maybe not. But I mean, they are the best team in baseball, and they showed it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that series was, that's a lot of dead air, but it's hard to remember right now exactly how the Dodgers got through it. Other than I remember a lot of good Julio Urias pitching, and I'm pretty sure Walker Buehler threw a good game in there too, but
I can't really remember. It was a lot of, I mean, it was just Dodgers baseball. It was they depthed them. Their depth just killed them.
Yeah.
And it honestly was basically a preview of the World Series. The instant that their opponent wasn't able to do exactly what they wanted to do, they were just done. The Dodgers have so much. I mean, again, this is the team that sent Kenta Maeda to the Twins for basically nothing and didn't even feel it. I mean,
did they do a bullpen game in game 7 of that series also, the Dodgers?
Yes, they did. Okay, so Gonsolin started, I think.
Did he get that one? He started game 6 of the World Series.
Right. And did poorly in both of them. And they still, I mean, just they have such a crazy amount of talent on their roster that, again, Kenta Maeda would be the number one starter on 20 teams, at least 20 teams. And for them, it was like,
do we really need him anymore? Nah.
You can show up in the bullpen to save us a couple million. We're just going to trade you for a bullpen arm.
I had a conversation with someone on Twitter. They were saying oh, it's just like the Dodgers to walk into somebody Gratterall. I was like, Kenta Maeda is not just walking into him. This isn't the Yankees thing where they pick up some scrub and that person plays out of their mind for 3 years. Get 3 prospect, and then that guy just breaks down.
Trading John Ryan Murphy Hicks.
Exactly.
And then ejecting Hicks with a bunch of steroids. But I mean,
what?
But their point was they didn't need him. He wasn't needed. I'm like, no, I understand that point. But it's still, that's still not nothing. That speaks to your point of just how much they have.
Well, and plus, Gratterall, we knew exactly, there was nothing at all surprising about what Gratterall did in the playoffs. He threw the ball really, really fast, got really weak contact, and that's exactly what we expected. I mean, he will probably be a really, really good reliever, and that's exactly what they needed. But it's just crazy the amount of depth, to your point, the amount of depth that they had that they could pull the trigger on a trade for a top line starter for a top line reliever and feel that they won that deal.
And it was by no means clear he was a top line reliever at that point. He was good, but I don't think this was foreseen. So that's even stronger to their depth. We can take a chance on this guy with, Maeda. That seems insane.
It does.
Yeah, remember, really the Dodgers weren't actually going to get Gratterall originally in that deal. The Red Sox were going to take him and then change their minds and backed out of that part of the deal. And then the Dodgers were like, I guess we'll take him because we still kind of want to clear out Maeda's spot. So, sure, we'll take We just really want Mookie, but we'll take Gratterall.
In fairness, you if you ask in a vacuum any team whether or not they want the second or third best player in baseball, they'll probably say yes. And Mookie showed in this postseason that, yeah, he's really good.
Don't forget the Dodgers also took David Price's contract in that deal, too.
Well, that doesn't mean anything to them.
Well, no, but that's the point. It's like they also had David Price opt out of this season, and they still had so much pitching depth.
It's just crazy. But I mean, and in that trade, they got the guy who realistically, Trout is pretty much hands down the best player in baseball, but he's not necessarily the best ambassador for baseball. But Mookie Betts is baseball. He is the face of baseball at this point.
Yeah.
You could not ask for a more complete everything package than Mookie Betts. Yeah, this bit talent-wise, but also just like the charisma and like media friendly.
Bowling.
This is the guy you want as your franchise face.
He's a 9-tool player.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. He's got tools that they haven't even thought of yet. And like he is, they get all that and they had to give up like practically nothing. The Red Sox are a joke, and I hope that they go 90 years before they win another World Series.
Well, let's. Do you have anything to say about the? It's harder again. It's hard to remember right now, but at the time, it was a compelling series, the American League Championship Series.
I was about to go back. I was going to say, like, even though it was a 7-game series, I don't remember a whole lot about the National League one, but the American League one definitely had more sparks, shall we say.
Had a lot of drama in that series because we had the three games the Rays won where they've made, it felt like literally every defensive play on the face of the planet, and they made it look easy. While Jose Altuve is short-arming ball after ball to first base.
Not blocking it.
And to that point, I think that the Rays really proved that starters get 5 innings, have a good relief pitch, have a good relief squad, hit some homers, and then play really, really good defense, and you're going to do really well.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of a lot of people is to overcomplicate the game and score a couple runs and then just pitch good and play good in the field.
Catch the ball, you know.
Yeah, basically, I mean.
Strike guys out and catch the ball.
Exactly. Strike guys out and catch the ball. I think if the Twins had struck guys out and caught the ball, you can make two runs stretch
a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two runs. It's harder to do that with only one run. But
we'll get to that.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. But then the Astros almost come back with, you know, amazing performances from the breakout star of the playoffs, Framber Valdez. Well, the second breakout star of the playoffs is obviously Randy Arozarena. The Framber Valdez had a great playoffs, and it almost seemed like the Astros were going to stab us in the hearts again with another.
Oh, that would have sucked so bad.
Second time ever that a team could come back. From down 3-0.
Framber was just ridiculous. His pitches were darting in just obscene ways that whole postseason. I mean, the Twins, you remember, the Twins, like, got up and we were sitting there like, okay, well, Framber's coming in and
right.
Should be able to knock him around a little bit. And nope. His pitches were just doing crazy shit.
His curveball is a really good pitch. He spots it on that. So right-handed batters, he spots it on the low inside corner. It felt like every single time.
I remember in game, I forget which game exactly it was, but Valdez came in against the Rays, and Nubish is sitting with me watching the games because he was absolutely obsessed with that series, that particular series he was just obsessed with. And Valdez is sitting there just dropping him in there left and right. And he looks at me and he's like, well, why can't the Rays hit this guy? He literally was just like, why aren't the Rays getting hits? And I'm like, because this is like Koufax mixed with Blylevin here. I mean, he's dropping pitches that are just ridiculous. They were shaving just the perfect parts of the plate. It was amazing. Rosarena obviously had the breakout playoffs of everybody, but Framber Valdez, he raises his stock like no one else did. It was crazy.
All right, so why don't we move on to the big salami itself. The World Series was overall an enjoyable one. I think most people would agree.
It was, yeah. It was. I mean, it went the way I expected it to. Probably, if you put it to me before, who would I pick? I would have picked the Dodgers again.
Like, well, I picked the Dodgers in six games, so it went the way I expected it to as well. Wow,
it's probably won yourself a contest there or something, right?
Oh, God, if only. Oh, we'll get there.
I'm sorry to hear that. But the ending of game, was it game four?
That was the crazy one.
Hilarious. And then, I mean, it's with the way game six went, it's not going to be remembered, but game four was such a crazy ending.
Game four, to me, it reminded me kind of my reaction of like that Vikings Saints playoff game, where just in the moment, you're like, what? No, what? Wait, yeah. Because I remember like with the catch, I'm like, get out of bounds. What are you? Oh, wait, yeah, run. And so the ball in live time, if I'm remembering this correctly, like the ball comes into the catcher. I didn't see it fly off to the side, but the catcher's got the ball, and the runner who turned the – you didn't see him fall originally. It was out of camera. So like, wait, where's the runner? Is he dead? And he kind of pulls back, and he's in the middle of the line, and that's when you see him look over there and run that way. When he's in the middle of the base, he's like, okay, guess I'm going home. And it was just one of those things in the moment. It's like, wait, what? Yeah. Whoa. Oh, hey.
Well, I mean, as it happened to turn out, all three of us happened to be on a Zoom call anyway.
True.
So it was a podcast preparation.
So right. Dan tells me, oh, hey, you're going to want to watch this one, because I have YouTube TV, so it's always a little bit behind. And I'm like sitting there and I watch the line drive, and I'm like, that's awesome.
The best part about this is we're all watching this on different feeds, so we're all getting it at like slightly right. different times.
I think we have three different.
I think I was the first one to be like, oh, and then just, yeah, keep going. Sorry.
So he hits the line drive into center field. I'm like, oh, sweet. This is going to tie the game. And then it bounces off the center fielder's glove. Right, and that's right, the right. first thing where I'm like, whoa, something. This is big. And then he recovers it fairly quickly, gets it into the infield. Right. I'm like, okay, sweet. They tie the game. And then the catcher clearly knows there's a guy coming home and isn't aware that this guy that's coming home is like sprawled on all fours halfway down the line, like completely just wiped out. And neither are any of the viewers at that point. So he goes to catch the ball in a way that he would be able to apply a quick tag and mostly misses the ball entirely.
But it was a quick throw, but it wasn't a great like relay. I mean,
no. Oh, it was a terrible relay.
But
if the catcher doesn't, if the catcher realizes that the runner is halfway down the line and like on all fours at this point, he probably like takes the time to catch the ball, to receive the ball, and do things with it. But instead, it bounces off, and you're like, "Oh, sweet, he's going to be able to score." And then, it, like, the camera pans out, and it's like, "Oh no, he's like." He fell. What happened here? And then he scores anyway. But it was just such. I mean, you know, they always do the WPA graphs, the win percentage added graphs, and like over the game, it's like up and down and up and down and up and down. For that one play, second by second, it would have been up and down and up and down. And oh, the hit, great. Oh, center fielder misses it, even better. Oh, the runner falls halfway through the base. Well, that's terrible. Oh, the catcher, just all over the place, up and down, all over the place. I was, by the end of the play, I was just laughing hysterically because there was nothing else you could even do.
No, it was beautiful. That was a work of art for sure.
You know, and before getting to the game six, I just, you know, one other thing I would, that were works of art were, and again, with the way people have talked about game six is it kind of felt like it got a little lost to me, but Kershaw and Walker Buehler threw three great games in the World Series too. And, you know, again, none of them were the clinching game, but they were all wins for the Dodgers. And so I don't think, hopefully people recognize those a little more. I mean, you know, for Kershaw especially, he finally got his ring, and he threw two great World Series games to do it.
Well, I was going to say, with game six, I was going to lead off with that, you know, just, you know, Kershaw had a good series, like a good playoffs, I mean, and especially, right. you know, a great World Series. And this was, you know, one more piece of that. And it wasn't like, you know, he's, you know, squeaked out with wins. He got convincing wins throughout.
Well, yeah. Especially that first game. I mean, that first game, he went in there and he just absolutely shut him down. Every, you know, the monkey's off his back, and you can tell it in like every interview that he's done since then. He's a World Series winning pitcher, and it's obvious when you see him. He's like, he's pumped.
Yeah.
It's good. Kershaw's always one of my favorites, and I'm happy. I was rooting low key for the Rays, but to a larger extent, I was rooting for Kershaw.
I was pretty glib in that one cup of coffee, I think. But no, I mean, with the series, I'm like, Rays win, Dodgers win. I'm happy with both. Like, it feels weird liking the Dodgers, but at least I like the Los Angeles Kershaw Betts. You know, that's my team. Let's say.
Well, again, like, Betts is such a good ambassador for baseball in general that it's hard to root against. I mean, even when he was on the freaking Devil Red Sox, I mean, it's like...
The Rays were the Devil team. They were the Devil Rays, but sorry, keep going.
Even that awful 2018 World Series, that was like the worst World Series I've seen in... probably since the Yankees took the Padres behind the shed.
One with the Nathan Eovaldi 18-inning game?
Yeah, I mean, that was, like, everything you could hate about a World Series, like, in general. That was just the worst World Series. But even at the end of it, you're like, Mookie's awesome, so it couldn't be all that bad.
All right, game six hot takes now. Lay it out there.
Cash was right.
Cash knew that Justin Turner had COVID, and Manfred told him to pull Snell, or the Rays would get contracted because he needed the series to be over.
Cash was absolutely correct, pull Snell. Snell hadn't completed six innings since July of 2019 in any game, regular season or postseason. He had lost 3 miles an hour off his average pitch in the sixth inning, and the one single and they took him out of the game was a cookie that he's lucky didn't get knocked over the fence.
Yeah. I think the biggest question is if Anderson was the guy. To me, that's the question, is if Anderson is the guy they should have gone to.
I don't think was. I think Snell was absolutely time to be taking out. I don't think Anderson was the right guy.
See, I'll give you, like, Snell is debatable, but Anderson was definitely not the guy. As I think that was the seventh game in a row he gave up a run. So that means six games before that he gave up a run.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Snell, and you can argue, but Anderson, that's the one that really is the head scratcher.
And, you know, I mean, it felt kind of like the Taylor Rogers thing. Well, you keep tossing him out there, eventually he's going to stop giving up. He's going to stop giving up these
I think it's like, you know, you don't base your evaluation on. I mean, if you trust that Nick Anderson is your best relief pitcher because of his body of work in a bigger sample, then, you know, then you trust that that's his true ability over what has happened in the last. I mean, this is the argument. I don't think I agree with it in this case.
I don't agree with it in this case. I think that at six straight games, I think, and I'm going to get my analytics card taken away for this, but.
Yeah, you probably should.
After six games of giving up a run, the dude is tilting. There is a mental aspect to the game, and you could tell the instant that he gave up that first hit that it was just like, he's like, oh, here it is again. I think the correct pitcher to toss in there would have been Castillo or Fairbanks.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, pick one. Yeah, the correct pitcher is one of another is another of two pitchers. Well, pick one. Call your shot.
Fairbanks. Let's do Fairbanks.
I'd go with Castillo. But either way, yeah, but the truth, either way, I think either one of them would, yeah. So I'm just going with what you just said, right? Which is that either one of them was probably a better pick than McAnderson there, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, truthfully, give a pitcher in Nick Anderson's position a clean inning. You know you got to pitch him in that game, but give him a clean inning.
Yeah, I agree.
I take it about half and half. I mean, he's obviously at that point really, really pressing and really, really tilting and whatnot. So, like, you don't want to put him in a position to fail. Give him a clean inning. Let him throw his one inning, and it's all good. And honestly, they would have had such an advantage if they would have been able to get to Game 7 because the Dodgers were going to have to use 8 pitchers that game.
Right. Well, the Dodgers would have needed Buehler to get deep into the game in Game 7, yeah.
If the Rays in Game 7 would have been able to get to Buehler at all, Cash would have looked like an absolute genius. Instead, he went to Nick Anderson. Nick Anderson gave up 2 runs, the inherited one and one of his own, and that was it. I mean, and the problem there is that what it was the entire series is that it was the Randy Arozarena show and nothing else. It was exactly what it was with the Twins against the Astros. It's the Nelson Cruz show and nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, it's really hard to manage to win. I mean, every decision you make as a manager is really hard to make when your offense can only score you one run. That's I think what it seems like to me. It's like the manager gets blamed because the pitching changes don't work, but when the offense scores only one run. It's really hard to manage in those conditions repeatedly.
And that's just it. It's that in the World Freaking Series and Game Freaking 6 in a close game, every single little thing is amplified hugely. I mean, Tom Kelly in 91, if Morris goes out there in the 10th inning, blows up and gives up 5 runs, he looks like a complete idiot. Yeah. Instead, he looks like the smartest manager ever because Morris goes out there and mows him down.
Because he lets his ace pitch.
Well, I mean, it was crazy to do that. It was absolutely crazy to do that. And instead, it's a myth. I mean, it's this mythic thing. I mean, it's a Greek god going out there and
it got him into the
literally
Hall of Fame.
It literally did. If Kelly takes him out in the 9th inning, Morris doesn't make the Hall of Fame.
I
can almost guarantee it.
Yeah.
Game 7 of the best or second best World Series ever, depending on who you talk to, being pitched by that guy. I mean, it's what myths are made of, and Cash fell on the wrong side of the myth. I mean, it's just what the World Series is. It's what makes it so fun. It's what makes it so fun to watch. Like, Bumgarner goes out and throws a 7-inning freaking save. I mean, it's crazy. It's nonsense. It's just ridiculous. But I mean, like, it's what makes it fun. It's larger than life performances out of guys that aren't really that good, but turn into that good. It's awesome. That's what makes it all fun.
Well, it's like, I mean, it's like, how many guys in who pitched for the Dodgers in Game 6 besides Gonsolin and Urias pitched 3 at the end?
Gonsolin, Floro, Wood, Baez, Gonzalez, and
Urias.
And Gratterall too.
And Gratterall. Okay, I mean, at least Alex Wood had been bad most of the year. I think he had actually a pretty good playoffs overall, if I remember right, but he was not good during the season. Pedro Baez had an awful playoffs up to that point.
Right. I mean, he came in and it was like, why are they throwing this guy in?
Right.
He was Nick Anderson, except he made good. It's all just, it's random. I mean, it all, there's winners and there's losers and it doesn't follow any path there.
Right.
I mean, Baez realistically should have, it should have fallen apart there and it should have been the end.
And with that, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be back with you shortly. And we're back from that break from our amazing sponsors, whoever they are. We're going to continue moving on, but real quick, we're going to cut away for a KBO preview. What you got for us, Pete on the Frontier?
So my Nubish was not ready to be done with the baseball. I told him that the Dodgers had won and that there was no more baseball until March, and that was not acceptable to him. And I said, well, as it turns out, the KBO is still playing. And he's like, well, what's the KBO? I'm like, well, it's the Korean Baseball League. They're playing their playoffs right about now. He's like, well, what is the KBO? And I'm like, well, it's Korean people playing baseball. Oh, okay. So we're watching the KBO, and before the major leagues started back up, I had kind of taken on the Heroes as my KBO team. Nubish has decided that the Lotte Giants are his team.
All right, Nubish. My team. They're not doing so good, though. Yes, I know.
The one game that we watched, they lost 16-4 or something.
They started off good this year, but they started off really good. But now they're a 500 team now, though.
The game that we watched, their starting pitcher pitched like an inning and then got a blister on his finger, and Nubish was all, well, he's hurt. He's hurt bad. He has to be out of the game now. Yep. That's true.
And I'm sorry, I'm not sure on the playoff structure. How many of the teams get in? Is it the top six?
So the top five teams get into the playoffs. Oh,
so like a wild card kind of thing?
Well, okay, so it's actually a pretty interesting setup. The top five teams get into the playoffs. The first round is just team four versus team five. And team four, the fourth seed, starts the best of three series one game up. So they have to win one versus the fifth seed having to win two. So it is a huge advantage to be the fourth seed versus the fifth seed. If you lose the fifth seed as the Heroes, my team, with Byung-ho Park and all that did, you have to win two versus the fourth seed winning one, which is a massive hole to be in.
That's an interesting mechanism.
So the mechanism is really, really crazy in that each seed basically gives you a bye for a round of the playoffs. So the third seed gets a bye for that whole first round. And the second seed gets a bye for the whole first two rounds. So the fourth seed and the fifth seed play off. And if the fifth seed manages to somehow win twice, they play the third seed. And the winner of that, I think it's a best of three, I don't remember, gets to play the two seed. I think it's a best of five there, plays the one seed. The one seed absolutely... It's like if the Dodgers were instantly transported to the World Series and didn't have to worry about playing the Padres or the Brewers or any of that garbage. They just went straight to the World Series.
You lost me kind of like towards the first quarter of that. But yeah.
I mean, well, basically every single seed that you get is another round you don't have to play. It's really dumb, but it's also really amazing.
Do you want to be the first seed in that case? Because you're just going to be sitting there for a while. Well, I mean, you only have one series then. But
you only have to play one series to win the championship. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. They say they basically, the instant the regular season is over, they just basically start scrimmaging. Just like nonstop. I mean,
it's like alternate sight all the time.
Pretty much. I mean, and it shows because the number one seed in the KBO has won, I want to say, 5 of the last 6. It's a huge.
That's the Dinos, right?
This season, it's the Dinos. Yeah.
Okay.
Noobish. That was the team that was going against the Giants. Noobish is a steadfast Dinos hater.
The Dinos are the Yankees.
Because they beat the Giants, he told me he absolutely does not want them to win any more games the rest of the season. And they're probably going to win, but we won't know for a while. It's an interesting setup.
Also, one quick last point before we move on. Like, it's basically like full fans in the stands now, right? Over there? I thought I saw a game. I could be wrong about that.
It's a lot of fans. I don't know if it's full yet.
It's more than what we had at the playoffs. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely more than we had in the playoffs. It's a bunch. But honestly, yeah, they've got still practically no cases.
There's reasons that I don't have a. I'm not saying as like, oh my goodness. I'm saying like, oh my goodness, good for them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Why don't we move on? Okay. Real quick. Worlds. We'll get to the nastier bits, but World Series MVP Seager. You guys gonna get any problems with that?
Other than the fact that it's not a Rosarena.
Yeah. I mean, it should just be.
I was thinking if I should ask who the Rays MVP was, but I was like, okay, we all know that.
It's like if you want to talk about because the problem with Seager is that, I mean, somebody from the winning team always wins MVP, right?
Right.
But the most valuable player of the series was probably Rosarena.
Oh, it was definitely Rosarena. Noobish, not to bring him up a million times, but he scoured his entire baseball card collection like 3 times trying to find a Randy Rosarena card and was like distraught that he didn't have one. Randy Rosarena became a superstar this postseason. It was actually a lot of fun to watch. I mean,
You do have to stop bringing him up because if you keep bringing him up, we're going to have to give him a producer credit. So anyway, sorry.
Go ahead. I think if you were going to pick a Dodger, I think Seager probably. I mean, maybe Kershaw.
Yeah, Kershaw. That's the other one I could see. Yeah.
But as far as Dodger hitters go, like because Mookie obviously had a great Game 6, but he hadn't hit that well in the series before that. Right. I think Seager probably was the most consistent of all their hitters.
Bo and I kind of debated. Because, you know, Bo and I are both huge Kershaw fans. We both love Kershaw. Mm-hmm. And Bo is like, okay, so is there an argument that Kershaw's the MVP? And I mean, in my opinion, a Kershaw MVP would have been mostly sentimental. He was one of the top 5. Mm-hmm. But I mean, right. I don't think there was any way to vote him as MVP over Seager, specifically Seager, but like Muncy or the COVID wonder himself.
Yeah.
Moving on to that, the cup of coffee the next day after that, I was going to, you know, I was thinking like, oh, you know, I always try to theme the cup of coffee picture if I can. And I remembered like, wait, I have a picture of Justin Turner in front of like a coffee shop from like 2 or 3 years ago. And I was like, okay, well, that's just the perfect picture to put on this one.
Well, it was so goofy because like, you're sitting there and you're like, you got the little bit of a buzz going from the end. You know, no matter who wins, as long as you don't have a real rooting interest, you're always just kind of like, yeah, it's the World Series. It's cool. This is a lot of, this is fun. This is baseball. This is what baseball is meant to be.
Yeah. And
like, it was a good game. I mean, it was a good game for a good series. Yeah, and yeah. It was a.
Let's spend all offseason arguing about analytics, man.
Right. You know, gearing up for the long war where everybody's like, hey, maybe we should just bunt nonstop for every play.
Get ready for the new market inefficiency of hiring 76-year-old managers. Oh, wait, that's later. Sorry.
We're getting to that.
Yeah.
Like maybe batting average should be the end-all be-all stat again. Maybe have we not thought that that should be it?
Pitcher wins, baby.
So we're all getting ready for that. And then I don't remember who the guy is on the channel, but he's like, and just so you all know, Justin Turner was taken out because of a positive COVID test, and everything was all sudden like, I got like 800 texts all of a sudden like, did you hear that?
What?
What the hell? Okay. And whoa, there he is in the celebration. Okay.
Before those two things, by the way, I think I turned the game right off, so I missed all the craziness. There was that. But then there was all like the post-game conference stuff, which was pretty crazy. Were you guys?
Oh, yeah. That? So the charitable viewpoint. So first of all, the instant Manfred is introduced to the crowd, he is viciously. I would not have believed that few people in the stands would be able to make that amount of a boo noise. I mean, they were booing him harder than Ashley Simpson got booed for doing the pregame at, I think it was the Rose Bowl or whatever. Way worse than that. And then when he got on there, and so the explanation is that with the monitor and the slight delay in feedback on everything, it makes you talk slower, but it made him kind of talk like he was either extremely drunk or was like in like the process of having a stroke.
I can't remember where I heard it. Somebody said it where like regard to the booze, like Manfred kind of had like a reaction to it, like he wasn't quite used to it. Well, but however, they were comparing him to like Roger Goodell, who's just like, oh yeah, yeah, that's what happens.
Well, I mean, like, Roger Goodell knows that
exactly.
Hated.
I mean,
Roger Goodell, got it,
but for Robbie, he was kind of like, oh my goodness, what's this?
Yeah, has Manfred ever been in front of people before? Goodell is like, he's a veteran.
He's got a raincoat for that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean. Goodell is a true trooper of the owners. He knows that he just gets out there, he accepts some booze, and he picks up his check.
I mean, it's like Gary Bettman, too. Shaken. He knows. Yeah. Gary Bettman knows how to handle that.
Manfred looked pretty shooken up by the booze, and then I don't know if he expected that, like, because he got up there and he handed out the commissioner trophy and everything. And then he was going to hand out something else, and they announced him again. And there was almost the exact same level of visceral hate for him. And I think that really shook him. I don't think that, you know, I think he figured that, you know, okay, fine. Initially, that sucks, but, you know, whatever. And then the second wave just hit exactly as hard as the first. And it was like, oh no, they really hate me. They hate me a lot.
Okay, and I don't know how much more we need to go on about the whole Justin Turner thing. I think that's been looked at a number of angles. It's just, I think the one point to specifically mention is, you know, we had a fun talk about, you know, a good series and everything was great, and it just killed everything after that. Just
all the goodwill
was just completely taken out after that moment. Cash was probably like, okay, yeah, that's cool. You're going to talk about this guy instead of me. No problem. Besides that, I don't know who would have been happy about any of this. And yeah, that seems the appropriate way to wind down the 2020 MLB baseball season.
It was going so good for so long.
That's what a friend of mine and I were talking about. It was like, you know, I mean, the season itself was way, way better than
beat all
any part of MLB had any right to expect.
By the time I got to week three, I'm like, huh, well, they're still hanging on. Okay.
Yes, they're going to keep playing through this. Yeah, I mean, back in week three, we'd already gone through the Marlins outbreak and the Cardinals outbreak.
Yeah, yeah.
those were, for the most part, the last outbreaks.
Right, right. And yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, well, they somehow pulled this off. I guess they get... Nope. They screwed it all up.
Nope.
It was just... Nope. It should have been a period... It should have been a period. It was an exclamation point. Why don't we move on from there? We will, at a future date, dig more into potential roster moves and what we might think about them. So we won't go too far into it. But so, though, in recent Twins news, shut up, Dan. sorry, all you other folks missed something. the Twins declined Romo's option. It was a $5 million option, and I think the buyout was $250,000, something like that.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we will go into other moves more in depth later, but with this one, just real quick, the option, yes or no, $5 million, take it or dump it, real quick.
I don't think there's any way that, I don't think there's any chance that Romo is done as a Twin. I think he's coming back. I think that, everything.
No, just talk about the option, Pete.
Yeah, just, yeah.
Would you have picked up the option or not?
$5 million.
No, because you don't need to. I think that to my point, I think they can have their cake and eat it too in this case.
I see where you're going with this. We're gonna get to that. We're gonna
do that later.
Damn.
No, I would not have picked up the option. In fact, when we talked about this 2 weeks ago, you guys were like, oh, yeah, Romo will definitely come back. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think I want it back. But regardless of whether it comes back or not, no, I definitely would not have picked up the option, especially with what we're seeing with other people's options going on. But yeah.
Well, Brad Hand being waived and like.
Okay, real quick. I'm a no on the $5 million. However, going back to Pete's point, yes, I think this is a case where there's, you know, mutual interest, but just not at $5 million.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No.
Well, apparently $5 million won't even get you. Apparently $5 million isn't even enough to like get you a Brad Hand. So
what? Huh?
The world, the entire everything is just all
$5 million could get you Brad Hand this year.
$5 million now could get you Brad Hand. So why would you want to spend it on Tony
Romo?
I mean, you might want to spend it on Tony Romo, probably not Sergio Romo.
He could be a good pitcher if you think about it. If you work for a while.
Can he throw a slider?
He might.
Oh, he can throw it
probably
into the ground
at least. Sergio Romo could.
Yeah.
All right. Like I said, we'll get back to that. A few more baseball notes. Actually, real quick. Maybe you can help me remember this. Speaking of Robbie Manfred, I think he said he wants to keep. There were two rules. I think he wants to keep the second base in the extra innings, right?
Yeah, I think he said he wants to, yeah.
And there was one more he said, though. I forget which one. It wasn't DH. It was
No, well, it was...
What was the other...
What I'm trying to remember.
Well, we did seven-inning doubleheaders, but that was only ostensibly just because of
the Rona. That wasn't the one he wanted. He wanted...
That was more out of necessity.
I mean, we were going to... I mean, is it the three-batter minimum thing? Because
I think that might have been it.
That was already a planned rule for this year before the Rona. So,
there was something else he wanted.
I don't remember
the one he wanted that everyone hated was the extra inning rule, and I don't actually hate it that much because, like,
I mean,
you said, Dan,
yeah,
like
we've talked about this
podcast.
Yeah,
baseball games have to end, and if you're not going to end them in a tie, have a mechanism to where they don't go 19 innings because the longer they go, by default, the longer they go because people start getting tired and less likely to be able to score a run. So as much as I don't really care for the second base runner as the default method to end a game, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I agree.
Real quick. I think, it is the second base one. And I think the other one is just a hope for a universal DH.
I think Manfred, I don't know if he expressed it at the same time as he was talking about the second base rule, but I do think Manfred wants to keep or try to get back instated the universal DH rule. I'd be surprised if he didn't want to do that. It sounds like they're not sure that is actually going to get negotiated to happen for 2021 yet.
Well, here, quick, real quick, from the score, Manfred also discussed the possibility of implementing the universal DH on a full-time basis but Hinton, there are hurdles to overcome before doing so, basically with the MLBPA.
Right.
Well, he was talking about something to try to outlaw the shift, too. I mean, it's just like, you know.
That would be dumb. Oh, I hope they don't do that.
Yeah.
I hope they don't do that.
I'm down with that. Okay. Some new new faces in the AL Central. First of all, let's go with the Tigers with the AJ. Not that AJ being officially hired now by the Tigers, but
almost as hated.
Yeah.
The Tigers are gonna break out their trash cans next year with AJ Hinch.
So you've got, I mean, kind of burying the lead on the other.
Yeah, the funny part is. I really thought the other team in the Central that was hiring a manager, I really thought until that Bob Nightingale tweet, and then I didn't even believe it when he tweeted it at first. But
why didn't they?
It's because Jerry Reinsdorf really wants Tony La Russa.
He's so stupid. Regardless. Okay, so now you've got two absolute, one literally already is in the Hall of Fame. Another one who will be in the Hall of Fame.
Terry Francona.
Another one who has won a World Series and is generally thought of as a very good manager. Another one who has won a Manager of the Year and is very obviously one of the up-and-comer, new crop, amazing managers. And
and Mike Matheny. Mike Matheny.
Of all the teams in the Central, I have the least amount of antipathy for the Royals. So the fact that they've got Mike Matheny guiding that team with no rudder and no up and coming direction, it's gonna be bad. It's gonna be rough.
Yeah, I mean the Tigers got a lot of work to do too on their personnel, I think. But
the Tigers are 3 years away. But in 3 years, they're gonna be where they were. The biggest takeaway from all this is, thankfully, La Russa's on the White Sox, because I think he will. I don't think he'll bring them down necessarily, but he won't bring them up.
I know a lot of people are like, well, he's a Hall of Famer, and then other people are like, yeah, but he's 76 years old, and I'm actually kind of in between that.
He's at least going to have a dampening.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally in between that. I think he's a complete peer neutral.
Right.
He's not going to make them into a 70-win team or anything, but he's not going to enhance them in any way.
No.
He's not going to take that young, exciting core group of players and make them. He's not going to pull a major league Cleveland Indians with them or anything.
Oh, it sounds like they're already going full Dallas Cowboys.
We are going to learn whether Luis Robert can bunt.
Yeah,
and that is just exciting as hell.
I can't wait for the first time Luis Robert bunts.
All right, I'm sorry. We shouldn't let this go too long. Let's very quickly go through our videos of the time period we're doing this. Pete, out of DJs, you are the most guest of us all. Why don't you go first?
Hang on, I gotta find it real quick. You're gonna have to edit this.
Dan, why don't you go first?
Well, since Pete's not going to go first, my video pick of my own for the last couple weeks is going to be, I don't think this is going to be a surprise if you've been paying attention to what I've been playing. There's a guy from a little band that we know as The National. His name is Matt Berninger. He's the lead singer. And
National.
Yeah, he just released a solo album called Serpentine Prison. And I played a video of him playing on CBS morning, the Saturday morning sessions of the song called One More Second.
Give me one more second to dry my eyes. Give me one more day to realize smoke's in our eyes or in the distance. Either way, we're gonna miss it. Give me one more year to get back on track. Give me one more life to win you back. Smoke's in our eyes or in the distance. Either way, we're gonna miss it.
No one's given it any ratings yet, so I'm a little sad about that. Not really, but par I think everybody should.
Par for the course.
Par for the course, exactly. But if you like Matt Berninger, if you like The National, I mean, it's another nice slice of that late autumn sad dad rock.
And, that's the perfect time
which,
for it. Perfect time.
Which
for
is exactly like as I said in the post, I'm planning on listening to that record a lot this winter while I'm sitting and drinking alone and wondering where we're all going, as Matt Berninger usually does in his songs. So yeah, please go back and check that out if you haven't yet. That's my pick of the week.
Hopefully the need for that won't become stronger in the next few weeks.
Hopefully not any more than it already is.
Yeah. Since Pete's still checking it out, this is going to be a simple pick. If you want to go ahead, go for it.
No, go for it.
Real quick. Mine's super simple and lame, but just because the video kind of affected me so much, it was Elliott Smith's Between the Bars.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, the video itself is, it's a great performance. It's just a simple him in a corner, just playing it, and he plays it perfectly. The song, I think I mentioned, it's kind of a perfect song in this way, just... I don't know. I love it. I love the melody of it. I love the walking bass line on just a single acoustic performance. I am not a lyric guy. And I think I mentioned that post, like, I was like, oh, wait, Between the Bars could mean this and it could mean this. And I kind of went back and looked at the lyrics. I'm like, oh, I completely misunderstood the point of this song. And it's beautiful and sad and terrifyingly depressing, but it's still somehow a great song, and it was a great performance. So that is my pick.
People you've been before that you don't want around anymore, that push and shove and won't bend to your will, I'll keep them still.
Is it Nibish? Nimbish. Sorry. Go ahead.
So obviously you should all listen to every War on Drugs song ever, because those are all awesome, and the new one is no exception to that.
Not enough guitar solos.
It probably could have used a guitar solo, but it was still pretty good without one.
It has a real Slave ambient feel to me. I mean, I've seen other people on the internet say that too, but it feels like
it
a real
does.
Throwback for that.
It does. It was really, really, really chill without being totally chill. It's a great song. Anyway, that's not actually the song that I was talking about. The one that I was going after was Danica's Ghost put one at the very end of his run by the Mic Drop Duo called, and I'm going to really screw this up, whatever it is. It's two guys, and they basically make rhythm by saying crazy, weird, random words in like a cafe and everything. It's weird, but it's weirdly stirring, and it needs more attention. It's an event. It's entrancing.
Protéger et j'appelle Hervé témoin choisi. Agité de cassette et danser sur les routes en chantant des chansons de shampoo après que tout le monde soit allé se coucher.
A lot of what Danica Ghost posts for his guest DJ weeks could be described as an event.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean that in a very, very good way, by the way, of course.
Specifically, that particular one, though, was just like, it was weird, and it was out there.
I need
to
go back through DG Week. I apologize. I do need to do that.
And if you're going to pick any week to go through, you should always pick DG Week, and you're rarely going to go wrong. He's got some great instincts when it comes to picking just weird out there but engaging music, and that one definitely fit the bill.
I cannot argue with that whatsoever. All right, well, I think we're running up to our time limit here, so we're going to close this down. A few pieces of housekeeping. First of all, we must congratulate the winner of the WGOM Half-Baked Fantasy Baseball League, and that is RPZ, who is also the commissioner. We're going to have to look into that eventually. And also, we need to congratulate the winner of the MLB Postseason Prediction Contest, which is Zoomex. And
for like the fourth time,
he also won it by a half a freaking point over the silver medalist, this weird guy named Hungry Joe. Half a point, half a point, half a point. Oh, God, can you believe it?
Yeah,
the humanity. Oh, the humanity.
It's like losing a football game in overtime on a missed extra point.
I know.
And that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck.
Okay, that actually is going to lead us to our quick Vikings recap. They suck.
Bonus.
Packers Gophers recap. Packers are going to score 50 on the Vikings.
Bonus recap. Gophers. They suck too.
They suck.
God.
Thankfully, I don't have to care about football this year.
Yeah. It makes it easier.
Why is football happening this year? It should be canceled.
I have
There were positive tests on the Vikings this week already.
The COVID numbers are skyrocketing in my county, and we're still playing high school football. I am convinced that the world will fall off its axis and spin into the sun, and we'll still be playing high school football.
Yeah. Well, if we've spun it off to the sun, it'll burn off all the coronavirus. So we'll be good there then, at least.
That's true.
Upside.
Yeah. You've got to look at the silver, white hot corona of the sun lining.
Always look at the sunny side of life.
Well, on that cheery note, we're gonna close down this episode of whatever. The Wugump,
the world's greatest online magazine podcast.
Wugump. We're gonna have to come up with a sound effect for that as well. I like it. That's about the amount of thud this will fall with. So it's been great. We'll talk to you soon, gang, and have a good one. Thanks and bye. They can't see you in the video. You got to say bye.
Hey!